deaths of David Palmer, Tony Almeida, and Michelle Desler. They were friends of mine.
That's the way it works.
Jack, Logan doesn't confess. How far are you actually willing to go?
As far as I have to.
Welcome to 24 Under Review, your one-stop shop for all things 24.
Now, let's rejoin our regularly scheduled podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 6 of 24 Under Review, covering hours 1 to 2 p.m. and 2 to 3 p.m. For the mid-season double dose of 24. As you've noticed, this is the latest podcast we've put out. It came out on Saturday, but we had it already on Friday night, other than about two to five minutes worth of editing, and then exporting it to MP3, and then my friend screwed my computer up. Well, didn't screw it up. He actually shut it down when he was done with it, and then I... for some reason had failed to save it at all, so I had to redo the entire episode, so that's why you're waiting until Saturday. Please check out 24boards.com, your one place to talk all things 24. Also, you can check out the redesigned pages for all of the podcasts this season that feature links to some of the more important 24 places, such as 24boards, and some other 24 podcasts that I listen to. So check that out, and we'll get right into tonight's double dose.
Previously on 24.
Wayne calls in the cabinet and the vice president for an emergency meeting regarding Tom's policy to lock up all people with a Middle Eastern background. And then in front of the cabinet and the vice president, Wayne rejects it. CTU learns that the terrorist they're looking for, named Darren McCarthy, has found an engineer, and they also intercepted a photograph of the engineer in the data stream, and it takes them quite a bit to decode the photograph, but once it's done, they discover it is Morris, who has left to see his brother, who has been reported as being in the hospital with high radiation levels from the bomb. He was then kidnapped by McCarthy. Jack interrogates Graham and learns about what happened in Season 5 regarding President David, or former President David Palmer, Tony Almeida, and Michelle Desler. And then Philip, Graham's dad, goes on to kill his son for fear that he knows enough that he is a threat to the entire mission for the day.
The following takes place between 1 p.m. and 2 p.m.
Jack is in a helicopter searching for Morris and McCarthy, and Chloe is back at CTU trying to get satellite images. Milo sees that she is worried about Morris, and she is not working to her full potential. Buchanan lets Jack know that Graham has died from a heart attack that was most likely caused by the drugs that Jack gave Graham during the interrogation. Jack tells him that Marilyn and Josh are on their way, and he would like Bill to break the news to them when they arrive at CTU. Milo gets in a little conversation with Buchanan, telling him that Chloe's mind is on Morris instead of the job. Despite her frustration about not being able to access the satellite images, she then tells Buchanan and Milo that she is doing it right and that she'll get it done with. And then Buchanan relieves her and tells Milo to do it. And it only takes Milo 15 to 20 seconds to get those satellites repositioned and the images. And back to McCarthy, as his associate, Rita, is driving. Morris is telling McCarthy that CTU is already on their tail, and then gives him the information that they have, because McCarthy says they have no idea that who McCarthy is. So Morris proves to them that they do by telling him all of their information on him. McCarthy then hears the helicopter and then opens the sunroof to see it. And then he tells Rita to try to evade them. And she actually is very scared. She's trying to resist what he says. But with a gun, it's kind of hard to do that. And then eventually they get onto under an underpass with many, many overpasses and bridges. And the satellite loses them. And then so Jack tells them to put the helicopter down on the ground over there. McCarthy hops out and breaks a window of a car under there and starts hotwiring it. While McCarthy is hotwiring the car, Morris tells Rita that they have no idea who she is, which will come in handy later. And then he also tells her about the whole plan, how McCarthy is associated with the nuclear bomb, and that's what he needs Morris for. She looks a little bit worried, but brushes it off. The chopper then touches down on two 18-wheeler trucks, and Jack gets out to go find McCarthy. McCarthy then goes back, puts Morris in the stolen car, and Rita tells him what Morris told him, and he says that it's just about the $7 million. And then right as they leave, Jack comes up to the car, and it's empty, and then the TAC team immediately arrives there to pick up Jack. Fayed is on the phone with McCarthy telling him that the address, and then suddenly Rito pulls out the gun and shoots him twice in the neck and pushes him out of the car and takes over the wheel. Morris is relieved that she is on the good side, and then she says that she's making $7 million for herself. And that was definitely a shocker to me. Wayne Palmer is back at the presidential bunker. Wayne asks Tom if he will support his policies even though he doesn't believe in them. Before Lennox can answer, the president gets word that Assad has landed at the Andrews Air Force Base and will be to the bunker shortly. Then, in his office, I would assume, Lennox tells Reed that he intends to resign because he no longer has an influence over the administration, and he isn't sure that Wayne has the stomach to do what is necessary, which he believes is to lock up Muslims. And then he tells Reed to go and print his letter of resignation so he can resign as soon as possible, because he does not want to be associated with Wayne's actions, which he believes will lead to more American deaths. Once Reed is out of the room, he dials a man named Carson, who is on Capitol Hill, and informs him that all of Tom's proposals were rejected by the president, and he also tells him that Tom is intent on quitting, and he is going to have to type up the letter. And with that, their plan is going to be destroyed because Reed needs access to the White House. And because Reed is evidently employed by Tom, Tom will take Reed with him when he leaves. Marilyn and Josh finally arrive at CTU, and then Buchanan tells her that Graham suffered a heart attack that killed him. And Marilyn instantly assumes that it was because of Jack's interrogation, or something Jack did, because she was not there during the interrogation, but we'll get to that later. Jack finds McCarthy's body, and there are quite a few policemen there, and a witness reports that he was shot by a female who was accompanied by a man fitting Morris's description. The phone that McCarthy had in his jacket had a call that came from an encrypted phone number, and Jack sends that data to CTU to be traced. Rita is back at Fayed's apartment, and then once she gets inside, she explains that she is one of McCarthy's, quote, associates. And then she goes on to say that she would like her $7 million, and that if they don't get it, McCarthy, the dead McCarthy, will rat out Fayed. And then Fayed tells her that she'll get her money when Morris has armed all of the bombs. Morris tells Fayed that he is not going to arm the bombs. And then with that, Fayed orders his men to beat him up, which they do with some baseball bats. And then we are back at CTU, where Milo is having difficulty tracing the call, so Chloe offers to try, and then she does it in about 30 seconds and informs Buchanan that the address is an apartment complex, but it has over 100 units, and they can't trace the exact unit, and then they inform the TAC teams of the location. Back at the bunker, Assad has just arrived and is escorted by two Marines, I think, with M16s. And Fayed is informed that if any more bombs go off, that Wayne will not sign the peace agreement. Wayne wants Assad to make the public address to Islamic communities that says that they want to bring down Fayed, and that the battle that they're fighting against the U.S. is a losing battle, which, from what I've seen, it's kind of a winning battle. They haven't gotten caught, and they've killed quite a few people. But Assad is hesitant because he thinks his people will assume he's an American puppet, and then they will want to help Fayed detonate the rest of the nukes. But Wayne will not back down and tells him that he has to do it if he wants a peace agreement. Jack arrives at the building where Fayed is assumed to be at, and there are already quite a few TAC teams there watching from about two blocks away, and there are also undercover agents in front of the hotel, and then they order, or not necessarily order, but ask Buchanan to get satellites on the building. And they also get infrared imaging, but they don't know which apartment Fayed is in, so Jack tells Chloe to trigger the building's fire alarm. Fayed's men are torturing Morris, and they stop when the alarm sounds, but then Fayed tells them that CTU has found them and there's no real fire, and to just stay there and hope that he can write the program. With time running out, Fayed puts a power drill into Morris's shoulder, which really didn't look too fun, but then again, what torture is fun? And then the lady, Rita, comes in and she says that she'll give up the $7 million if they let her go. With that, Fayed shoots her. She falls over and lives for a few seconds. Morris looks into her eyes and then says he'll do whatever Wayne wants. And then Lennox expresses his frustration to Reed about Wayne in this little clip we got right here.
This memo says Palmer's arranging for Assad to make a televised statement.
I heard.
Not only are we providing free airtime to a mass murderer and avowed enemy of democracy, we are proving terrorism works. Oh. You have my letter of resignation.
No, sir, I don't.
Why not?
Because you can't resign. While this country is being brought to the brink of a nuclear holocaust by a weak, misguided president.
Damn it, Reed. I explained. I cannot get the president to budge on policy. There's nothing I can do about this.
What if I told you that the climate could change?
What does that even mean, the climate?
Well, I'm just saying that there are people who believe, like you, that more aggressive steps need to be taken to crack down on terrorism both here at home and abroad, and that a change in leadership is imperative to ensure this nation's security.
Who?
Excuse me, sir?
Hey, who are these like-minded people we're talking about?
Well, I'm just speaking abstractly. But you'd have to agree that your plan would have all the support it needed if the vice president were the man occupying the Oval Office.
Wait. Now, I may dislike the president's current course of action. I hardly think it warrants his removal.
I'm not talking about holding hearings. Something more immediate would have to happen.
Oh my God. You can't possibly be intimating what I think you are.
I'm not intimating anything. I'm just simply musing.
Careful. That kind of musing gets you thrown into prison for treason.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir, that you've misunderstood me.
Yeah, certainly hope so, for your sake. All right. I think you have a letter to draft for me.
After all of the people have been evacuated from the apartment that Fayette is staying in, CTU is able to use the infrared satellites to see who's left in the building, and then they also cross-check that with the apartment records, who owns the apartments, and they determine that the person is that Fayette is in the sixth floor apartment, and with that, the CTU teams deploy and quietly raid the building. In the meantime, Fayette is telling Morris that he should be done with it because McCarthy told him it would take mere minutes for an advanced programmer to program the trigger. But then again, we have to take into account that Morris is a data analyst, and obviously not his expertise is not programming, although he does know it. With that, he finishes it, and then Fayette orders him to arm one of the bombs. After it works, Fayette instructs his men to kill Morris. Just then, an explosion rips through the apartment, and Jack and some of the CTU agents engage Fayette's men, taking them down. And what I loved about this was Jack with his shotgun. He was amazing. He should use a shotgun all the time. And then none of the agents can find Fayette, so Jack looks around. He doesn't find him, and they fear that he has escaped. Jack finds the nuclear weapon and radio CTU, and then we get our commercial break, and when we return, Chloe has the schematics on her screen, and she is guiding Jack through disarming the bomb. One of the agents finds a door in the closet, I think it was, that appeared to be Fayette's escape route, which I found funny because as he was opening the door, he said that he told Jack that his teams had already formed a perimeter around that. So I don't know what in the world that was about, if they used a secret channel that Jack couldn't hear, but that doesn't matter. And they think Fayette slipped out because some people witnessed a medical chopper taking off a few miles away. Jack follows Chloe's instructions with shaking hands, and he deactivates the nuke with mere seconds left before it explodes. Which I didn't really like that little scene there, because if Jack is there, we know it's not going to go off. So, you know, that wasn't even tense for me. It was just a matter of how long he'd have left. So, that really, they should not have Jack defusing the bomb again. But then Morris tells Jack that he has if they do not find the device, that Fayette can activate any amount of nuclear bombs with the device. And Jack is furious that Morris made the device work, which frankly, I thought Morris would write a script that just told him to say device armed on the screen. But then again, if you didn't notice, there were parts in the nuclear bomb that were moving, so I guess Fayette would notice that and then freak out. But Morris was rescued 10 to 15 seconds after arming the device, so I guess we could have stalled them for 15 seconds there. But then Linux gets a fax, I believe, that says Fayette has the capability to arm the remaining suitcase nukes, and then he calls Reed, telling him, quote, "That talk we were having in my office, I don't think I misunderstood you." And then Reed warns him not to speak over the phone until he has a secure location. And then Linux hangs up. what I find funny is how people give information on the secure location over an unsecure line. You know, it's the weirdest thing ever, which I've never understood. But we will get on to the second episode in the doubleheader.
Previously on 24.
Jack extracted information involving Season 5 from his brother Graham, and after Jack leaves, Philip kills Graham for fear that he will spill the beans on their plan for the rest of the day. Assad is asked by Wayne to go on the air asking all extremists to lay down arms. Tom is angry because the president didn't accept any of his proposals, and he says that he is going to resign immediately. Morris is abducted by McCarthy and his associate, who delivers him to Fayed. Fayed then tortures him until he writes a script to arm the nuclear bombs he has, and he does so. Fayed arms one of them, which Jack disarms with seconds left. Fayed keeps possession of the trigger and three more nukes.
The following takes place between 2 p.m. and 3 p.m.
Fayed is in his helicopter about to land in the L.A. River Basin, which is a very, very popular place in the world of 24. Fayed, when he lands, Fayed phones Dmitry Gradenko, the former Russian general who had contracted BXJ to decommission the bombs, and he is annoyed that they are now down to only three bombs. They were supposed to have five, and he mentions that his delivery systems are en route and should be there within 2 hours. Buchanan gathers his staff for updates, and Milo was able to restore the fragment of an email between Fayed and Gradenko, and they surmise that Gradenko has actually been associated with Fayed, and they previously thought he was not at all associated. He just gave the nukes to BXJ, but not the case, they assume. And they also think that because the timestamp on the email is Pacific time, that he probably is in L.A. Morris is brought into CTU, and Chloe rushes to him, but he is embarrassed and does not respond. Jack enters CTU for the first time in almost 2 years, and it was funny because absolutely everybody in the office stared at him for 10 seconds as he walked in and looked around. But that aside, he then went to Bill and talked to him. Bill informs them that they do believe that Gradenko is involved in the nuclear bombs, and he is probably aiding Fayed in detonating them. Chloe thanks Jack for saving Morris's life, and she says that she's really glad Fayed didn't kill him this morning. Philip is erasing messages on Graham's cell phone in the CTU morgue. Jack comes in and observes his father for a few seconds before telling him he's there, and then he said he didn't mean for it to happen, and Philip acts like he doesn't believe him. Jack gets down to business and asks him what he knows about Gradenko, and he is pretty angry, and he says he had no involvement in it, but he will call execs of the company. And then when he says that he's going to go ask Marilyn, it's funny because Philip says that, what, you're going to go interrogate them also? So I found that kind of to be one of the little things Jack should have picked up on, that he's not the best person. So hopefully Jack catches on to that later. And then Chloe goes back in to check on Morris, and he is not happy, blaming himself for the other bombs that Fayed is probably going to set off. Philip goes into a corner to call his, his security man, Liddy, and he orders Liddy to kill Gradenko before CTU gets him, because he could expose Philip's involvement. Now, one thing I do not get at all is why in the world is Philip able to walk wherever he wants in CTU? I mean, maybe he should have an escort or something, Because, you know, couldn't a terrorist potentially just do that? Which, I guess right now it's happening because he will turn out to be a terrorist later. And then Buchanan shows Jack the toxicology reports on Graham. I was thinking that they would probably discover that there was a double dose of this stuff. There was over, I would think, 16 cc's when the limit was 8, and that's all that Jack ordered to be put in.
What is it?
It's the toxicology report on your brother's body. Forensic evidence indicates that the hydrazine pentothal you administered to Graham during his interrogation caused his coronary. There's something else. I saw the field tape and Rick Burke's report for division. He said you exceeded protocols even after he warned you of dangerous levels.
That's true. Agent Burke tried to warn me.
Then you pulled a gun on him. You must realize how this looks, Jack. Coming right after your brother tried to kill you?
I lost control.
Because you found out he was responsible for David Palmer's assassination?
Yes, because I found out about David Palmer's assassination. Because I found out about everything. I lost control. I tried to tell you I didn't think I could do this. This job. I wanted to kill my brother. I wanted him dead. I was standing over him. And I looked up and I saw my father in the doorway. And everything just stopped. I ordered Agent Burke to shut down the IV. He did. I thought we got it in time. Bill, I did not set out to kill my brother. I swear to you.
I can adjust the report before I send it to division.
No.
Jack, an internal affairs investigation will impede our search for Fayette and Gradenko. Right now, you are critical to that.
You cannot cover this up. I ordered Agent Burke to administer the hyoscine pentothal. I killed my brother. Whatever the consequences are, I accept them. Bill, do this right.
Okay. I'll submit the report as is.
Then, with Fayette sitting right next to him, Wayne receives a phone call from the vice president.
Noah, thank you for taking my call, Mr. President. I know you're pressed for time.
What can I do for you?
I'll get right to my point. I've made no secret of my disappointment that you rejected Tom Lennox's plan for mass internment of the Arab nationals in our country.
The plan did not delineate country of origin, Noah. It was nothing more than a blanket proposal to arrest and detain thousands of Muslims living here. Without due process, I might add.
Be that as it may, since as I understand it, the terrorists have now acquired the capability to arm the three remaining nuclear weapons, I'm asking you to reconsider.
And I thought I told you that my decision was not open for debate.
Well, that's unfortunate, Mr. President, since the majority of your cabinet feels that you're making a tragic mistake.
I respect that. But I firmly believe that our best chance of stopping further attacks will come from the intelligence drawn from Islamic communities.
And you hope to obtain that by letting a known terrorist leader address the world on American airwaves. Man has murdered countless innocents over the past 20 years, and you are putting your hopes for this country's safety on him.
Not entirely. But to the extent that he can help us, yes.
Mr. President, you approached me to be your running mate because you knew I could deliver voters who questioned your experience, who were afraid that your presidency would be too weak on national defense, and I assured them otherwise, but now you're proving them right. There's a thin line between conviction and stubbornness. You can stand firm, but just know that you're standing alone.
Are we done?
Clearly.
You are paying a very high price for doing this.
And a size my country will pay if I'm wrong.
As someone who has alienated followers by choosing the unpopular course, I suggest you tread carefully among your people.
Mr. Assad, our cultures are very different, sir.
It's not just a cultural issue, Mr. President. It's simple human nature. They will come after you. I assure you of that.
After that, Tom is at the secure location, and he looks a little bit puzzled about where he is, but he walks into a door that says high voltage on it, so I was hoping maybe he or Reed would get shocked to death. Disappointingly, that didn't happen, but here's the conversation that follows.
You sure it's safe to talk in here?
Yes, this area is currently unmonitored.
All right. You intimated you had some sort of plan of dealing with the president.
Palmer's refusal to implement your proposals will unquestionably lead to the loss of many more American lives. And I, and many others like me, who love this country, will not stand by idly and let that happen.
So what is it you propose?
I think you know.
I need to hear.
Definitive action. We are in the middle of a national crisis, and he is in over his head. He's brought this on himself. Listen, before you start reconsidering and report me, just know I will deny that we ever had this conversation.
No. I'm not. I'm not reconsidering. I know what you're saying is necessary. I just cannot believe it has come to this. Who else is involved?
You don't need to know that.
I'd like to know who I'm dealing with.
Right now, you're dealing with me.
Vice President Daniels, is he involved?
No, the Vice President doesn't know anything about this. But we do know that he shares our sentiment in regard to the current state of affairs, and that he will enact your initiatives once he has the power to do so.
You seem pretty certain this is going to work.
More so with your help. I need the president's itinerary, specifically in regards to Assad's televised address. I do not have the proper clearance. I need you to access it.
Why? Why do you need this? Damn it, Reed. We're talking about removing the President of the United States. Do not keep me in the dark here.
I never said that I was the architect of this. I'm just a conduit. Besides, for your sake, I think that it is very important that we maintain a certain level of plausible deniability. The less you know, the better.
I'll get you that itinerary.
Back to Jack. Marilyn doesn't really blame Jack for Graham's death, and she says even if it was caused by what he did, she has always wanted to leave Graham, but he has threatened to take her son away, so she didn't do it. When Jack asks about Gradenko, Marilyn admits that once she followed Graham to a house where there were Russian men with Russian accents. She didn't remember where it was, but she might be able to retrace the route. And she says she did that because she thought he was cheating and she wanted to do anything that would help her in a case to get custody of their son when they divorced. Jack tells Buchanan that they may have a lead on Gradenko, and Philip, who has been watching Jack, approaches Marilyn and asks what Jack wanted from her. Philip brings up the name Gradenko, claiming that Jack questioned him about the man too. Marilyn says she knows nothing but did follow Graham to a group of Russians in West Los Angeles and Jack wanted to take her there. So she asks Philip to stay with Josh. And this again is one of those times when I have no idea why Philip is able to walk around freely, although he is talking to his daughter-in-law, but, you know, I guess that helps make the story a little bit more intriguing. And then Buchanan sends Milo with Jack in case there are any hard drives or other tech-related stuff with intelligence on site. And Philip asks Marilyn if he can bring Josh back to his house for a, quote, friendly environment, which we will later learn is nothing like that. Marilyn reluctantly agrees and leaves CT with Jack. Philip calls Liddy and orders him to find a house near West Los Angeles, and then he will lead Jack there so that Jack can get killed. Philip orders that Liddy not harm Marilyn because they need her to find Gradenko. Chloe asks Morris for help running tactical, but he accuses her. Chloe evidently really wants him to help because she tells him that he's been through a lot today and you're really starting to piss me off, and then slaps him in the face. And this just made no sense. I mean, come on, he just had a drill bit put through his back 45 minutes ago and you're going to slap him because he won't help you do something that you're best at? I just felt bad for Morris there. And then on the drive to West Los Angeles, Marilyn confesses to Jack that she thought about him for a while he was in China. And she believes that it was Philip that drove him away because Philip wanted Jack to join the company, and that's why Jack went to the military. Marilyn asks if she was another reason for Jack leaving, and he responds no. And then Philip phones Marilyn, and this is where we add another twist to the story, and informs her that her son is being held unknowingly. He's being held hostage.
Hello?
Marilyn, it's me. Don't say anything. Just listen. I don't want Jack to know I'm on the line, you understand?
Okay.
You're involved in something that's much bigger than you can possibly imagine. So here's the deal. Unless you do exactly what I say, I will hurt Josh. If you don't believe that, you might want to consider this. Graham's death was not an accident. I killed him. I want you to say thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan.
Now, you're not going to take Jack to the house where Graham met the Russians. You're going to take him to a different address. 9407 Hendry Place. You got it?
Yeah.
Good. Now, you do this for me, and I promise you, you will see Josh again. If you don't, he dies. 9407 Hendry Place. Do the right thing, Marilyn. I already lost a son today. Don't make me lose a grandson.
Goodbye, Susan.
After that, Philip hops in the car with Josh, tells him it was a business call, and tells him that the roads on the way to his house are closed and that they should probably just go to a hotel. And then, Marilyn, with Jack, sees the house where Graham had met the Russians, and you can see the Russians inside, but she says nothing to Jack. In that house, Gradenko and his men are programming targets on a United States map, and then he comments that his country was afraid to attack America with nuclear weapons during the Cold War, but that he will get revenge with the suitcase nukes from Russia. And he says that the Arabs will take all the blame. Not so. Our friends at CTU already know you're involved with this somehow. And then after the commercial break, Morris is out of medical, cleaned up and wearing a nice new shirt. He sits down and is ready for work. It took him only 117 minutes to recover from having a drill bit stuck through his back a few inches in. It's kind of amazing how good the medical crew over at CTU is. And then back to Josh and Philip as they enter the hotel. Josh comments that he knows he's being lied to and his father did it too, but he wants to know why his father died. He knows that his father was doing something illegal, and he gets no results other than Philip telling him that there will be a lot of questions asked. Marilyn points out the house that Philip told her the address of, and Jack tells all TAC teams to go there, including Milo, who is following in a milk truck-like vehicle. And then as Jack prepares the TAC teams, Marilyn attempts to talk to him once, and then Milo walks up to him, and she tried to tell him twice that I would think that that's not the right house, and he was preoccupied enough that he ignored her, and it would cost him. Jack and the TAC teams raided the house, and it's empty. Jack spots the blinking red lights of a C4 explosive behind the only thing in the house, which is a few boxes. He yells that there's a bomb and jumps out the window, and he hits the ground just as the bomb goes off. Milo puts Marilyn in the van for safety, and then he realizes they are about to be attacked, and they leave. During the chase, the men from Phillips' team hit the wheels of the van, and it blows the wheels, and they crash into a brick wall, and then they fire at the van. Milo pulls a pistol out and then puts a frag grenade down, and after about 6 to 8 seconds it blows up, which I found that to be a little bit fake, that it would take that long for the grenade to go off. But after most of the men fall down, and then they start chasing them. And back at the house, Jack wakes up from, I would think, unconsciousness, and calls his team on the radio, and no one responds. In the previews, so if you are not a previews fan, skip to the next chapter. It showed Jack and Marilyn, and Jack accuses Marilyn of tipping off Gradenko's men that he was coming, and then I don't know if it was good video editing or just the next part of the dialogue, but then she says, no, those were your father's men. So, you know, we know that Jack's going to figure out next episode, and hopefully he can act on it and find his father, which I don't know how easy that will be. I guess they can go back and look at satellite images from the time he left and see where he went. But we'll see all of that next episode. Comments on 24 boards are definitely slowing down, so hop over there and start getting more comments, please. We have very few comments to put on the show, but the one subject there was really this week was on the guy that programs the nukes. Oscar the Grouch writes, why didn't Morris put some sort of code in that would show the nuke is armed, which when it really isn't? That's what I predicted. Why didn't Morris program something that would kill the nuclear bomb once you hit the arm button, which I didn't notice that, but that's actually very good. Or why didn't he put some kind of program that would allow people at CTU to disarm it? That would have been amazing. All of those are very, very good ideas. And then Son of a Bench talked about how at first he thought Morris would write a bogus script, but I guess Fayed would have known since the bomb actually has moving parts visible. All of those are good ideas. I don't know why Morris didn't do anything. I guess Rita got to him, because once Fayed shot Rita, Morris looked into her eyes, and then he's like, oh yeah, I'll do what you want, which that made no sense. The way to honor her bad deeds is not to do what she came to do. It's to stand up to Fayed. But I guess that sets up the rest of the season. We have 3 more nukes to disarm. So I guess those kinds of decisions have to be made. Have a great President's Day weekend. And we'll be back probably next Thursday or Friday.